Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for Wednesday, January 24th. I'm Alan Chartok. Congressman John Faso, a Republican from New York's 19th District, is in the studio today. His district encompasses all the parts of 11 counties in the Capital Region, Hudson Valley, Catskills, and Central New York. Do you have a question for Congressman Faso? Give us a ring. We're expecting a ton of calls on today's program, so get yours in early. The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Congressman John Faso, your calls and more coming up right after this news. Hello again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Today, we welcome Congressman John Faso of New York's 19th District to the program. His district encompasses all or parts of 11 counties in the Capital Region, Hudson Valley, Catskills, and Central New York. The first-term Republican serves on the House Budget, Agriculture and Transportation Infrastructure Committees, former Republican leader of the New York State Assembly. Congressman Faso graduated from SUNY Brockport and Georgetown University Law Center. He lives in Kinderhook. Congressman John Faso, welcome back to the Vox Pop.
Thanks, Alan. Nice to be with you.
Good to see you here. The number to call, everybody, with your civil questions is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, we're going to have a lot of calls. Many people are writing me and say, ask them this. No, call now, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. John, you ready to go?
Ready.
Okay, we'll go to Bruce in Kinderhook, your town. Okay, Bruce, you're on.
I think it's Bruce in Rhinebeck.
Oh, Rhinebeck. I'm so sorry, John. You're much smarter than I am, and you can read also. Bruce in Rhinebeck, you're on.
I was waiting for Bruce in Kinderhook. I'm Bruce in Rhinebeck.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay, so what, if any, gun control laws would he support that are not currently on the books?
Bruce, thanks for the question. I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, but I do think that, for instance, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, if they should do this by regulation or Congress should do it as well, the whole issue of bump stocks that the shooter used in the Las Vegas shooting, which were intended to convert a semi-automatic weapon into, in essence, a fully automatic weapon, that is the type of thing that there's no... That should be strictly regulated. Right now, fully automatic weapons are highly regulated by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and a device that would convert a semi-automatic to a fully automatic weapon like that is something that should be severely regulated by Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. In fact, I have colleagues in Congress. One guy in particular was a gun dealer, and he told me before that incident he'd never even heard of a bump stock. So this is something that the vast majority of sportsmen, I think, recognize that it's highly unusual and should be extremely strictly regulated.
Bruce, good question. Okay. And now somebody hung up on line number two, so we'll go to line number three. Kate in High Falls. Kate in High Falls, you're on.
Yes, hello, Representative Faso. I'd like to ask you to comment on what you know about the serious health impacts and privacy violations of the digital utility meters being installed on homes and businesses, and the same regarding the intended installation, and I know around the country it's happening already in some places, the installation of this 5G technology, mini cell tower type radiation directly into the home, like on every other telephone pole, radiation that penetrates even more deeply into the body. Many people have already become sensitized to these radiations.
Okay, Kate. We're going to get an answer. Go ahead.
Kate, I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with the question of a radiation risk from those towers. So I'll look into it. I'm not certain. I'm sure what you're talking about. The digital utility meters. I know that there have been some privacy issues raised at that. That is something, though, that's regulated at the state level, not at the federal level. And I think that the, from what I understand, this is what the utility companies would use in order to be able to not have to send someone out to manually read a utility meter, but to be able to have this information in real time. So if that presents a privacy issue, it's something that should be done at the state level, and it should make sure that the any transmission of information from a digital meter should be done in a way that is such that it can't be tapped into or monitored by someone other than the utility.
Thank you, Kate. Okay, let's go to Renee in New Paltz. Renee in New Paltz, you're on.
Thank you.
Sure.
Congressman Sasso, when I met with you last April, you were interested in an article I had about toxic chemicals, in particular one, chlorpyrifos, something like that.
Yes, yes,
and
I do recall.
It is extremely toxic for farm workers and their children. So I understand you sit on the Agricultural Committee, and I don't know what, if anything, you have been doing to counter the rollback of prohibitions on the use of these toxic chemicals by the EPA.
So,
can you tell me?
Yes, Renee, thank you. And I did look into this. That chemical could be harmful if it is used inappropriately. The apple growers in our region are extremely supportive, as is Cornell Cooperative Extension. I did look into that. There are risks, certainly, if it was improperly stored or improperly utilized. But properly used, the apple growers in our region are strongly in favor of it. The other issue, generally speaking, we've heard about Hoosick Falls and the exposure up in Hoosick Falls. I've asked the EPA to actually specifically evaluate that particular chemical under the Hazardous Substances Act. And I don't know if they'll do that or not, but I do think that all of these things in our environment we've got to be careful about. But we also have to be recognizing that, you know, the apple growers in our district made a very strong case, as did Cornell Cooperative Extension. And I went down to the monitoring station in southern Ulster County, and we talked specifically about that chemical because you asked me about it. And the folks that are expert in this area argued strongly that if it is properly maintained and properly utilized, that it poses no health risk. And keep in mind, we also have, and this is while that particular chemical question is not subject to the regulation or the oversight of the Agriculture Committee, one of the things that I'm going to try to do in the Farm Bill, which we're going to do in 2018, is to make sure we have a very strong agricultural research component, because we're dealing with a lot of invasive pests, for instance, the stink bugs, which are all over the Hudson Valley and central New York and the Catskills, the stink bugs, which are really a nuisance to people, but they are, because they invade your house like crazy, but they are a real problem for the fruit industry in the Hudson Valley, which is extremely important. So there's a lot of good research going on under the auspices of Cornell and the apple growers here in the Hudson Valley. So
thank you
for the question.
Thanks, Renee. Okay, and now over to Bob in Grafton. All right, Bob in Grafton, you're on with Congressman Fasso. Go ahead.
Hello, Congressman Fasso.
Good afternoon.
On Monday, you issued a statement on the Senate cloture vote quote, Senate Democrats and Senator Schumer have finally come to their senses and have agreed to reopen the government. I'd like you to explain how you think that kind of rhetoric promotes bipartisanship and how it will help the upcoming budget vote and negotiations on DACA.
Well, I think, Bob, thanks for the call. I don't think that's particularly extreme rhetoric. But the fact is that the Senate Democrats and Senator Schumer made a real mistake. It was a miscalculation to shut down the government over DACA, which is unrelated to the funding of the government, the funding of our military. And it's similar to what the box canyon that Senator Ted Cruz and a few of his colleagues got themselves into in 2013 when they shut down the government over an unrelated budget issue, namely the Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. I will never vote to shut down the government over an unrelated fiscal matter. I just won't do it. I think that's irresponsible and reckless. And I don't think that my words really were too harsh in that regard or too dramatic. I think they were direct because you're going to basically what the Senate Democrats were doing, they played an awfully risky game of legislative ransom. They were trying to ransom the budget on the basis of the DACA issue, which is important, but I think it's close to being resolved. And the other part of this is that I'm not about to say to a military family whose service member, their husband or their spouses or their wife is over in Afghanistan for us, that we're not going to pay that service member and you're not going to get your housing allowance for your family when your loved one is protecting our country abroad. So I think it was extremely reckless and short-sighted on their part, as it was for Senator Cruz back in 13. So I think that it was the wrong decision, and I'm glad they came to their senses.
Bob, thank you. 1-800-348-2551. We got one or two free phones, but every phone is busy, as you might imagine. All right, we'll go to Christine in Salt Point. Okay, Christine, you're up.
Thank you for taking my call. Congressman Faso, my question relates to your co-sponsorship of the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Bill. Could you explain why you have focused more on expanding the rights of gun owners than on defending the right of children to go to school without being shot, the right of ordinary people to go to movies and concerts without being shot, and in general, the public's right to be safe from gun violence in their daily lives? Thank you.
Well, Christine, thank you for the call. I co-sponsored the bill because when I ran for election in 2016, I said I would co-sponsor the bill. And the reason I co-sponsored the bill is twofold. One, law-abiding gun owners are statistically have a virtually infinitesimal crime rate. The problem with gun violence in our country overwhelmingly does not apply to people who have gone through the process and gotten a pistol permit, for instance, in our state. Secondly, many people have inadvertently gotten themselves afoul of the law when they have crossed a state boundary with a concealed weapon, which they have a permit to carry in their home state. Now, this does not mean that someone who comes from New Jersey into New York does not have to follow New York law. Not in the least. They have to follow all the laws of the jurisdiction in which they go. But the mere fact that they're carrying from one state to another would not be a crime. So that's really all it does. It's a very modest proposal. It passed the House on a bipartisan basis. Mostly Republicans supported it. Some Democrats supported it. So I appreciate your concern about it, but the concern should not be about gun violence from people who are following the law, obeying the law, who are valid gun owners in our state.
Okay, well, thank you for that. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from George Heigl Antiques, Boston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses, 518-396-7974. Mass Match, for over 16 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service connecting singles through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond, massmatch.com. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996, imediaconsult.com. Adoptive and Foster Family Coalition of New York, offering support, information, and advocacy since 1975, serving New York's adoptive, foster, and kinship families, affcny.org for information. And Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, practicing aesthetic plastic surgery, working to help people improve their appearance and well-being, a surgeon's hands, a woman's touch, CAPEKplasticsurgery.com.
And we are back. Thank you very much with Representative John Faso. Howard has written a note to you, John, and said in the last month, AT&T laid off 4,000 employees. Macy's laid off 10,000, GE laid off 12,000, carriers laying off 250 more workers in Indiana. Walmart closed 63 Sam Club stores, 40,000 tourism jobs have been lost, and now Toys R Us is shuttering 180 stores. How do Republicans like yourself, says Howard, with a straight claim, with a straight face, that Trump's economic policies are helping ordinary working class Americans?
Well, Howard, I would say a couple of things. One, a number of the employers that you mentioned are retail. We know retail is under some distress, and a large part of the reason is because of technology and something called Amazon. And that is the prime reason, which, frankly, it wouldn't matter who's in the White House or which party's in control. Technology is driving that. There are a lot of reasons for that, and I'm very sympathetic to the brick-and-mortar retailers, frankly, and I try to shop local all the time. But the fact is that we live in this digital age where with things like Amazon, people are now ordering household goods and groceries through Amazon. It's a very, very different dynamic, and we have to accommodate to it. I do think, though, it's important when you had the litany of things that you mentioned, Howard, consider Apple. Apple just announced, because of the repatriation provisions in the tax bill, they're going to bring $250 billion, back into the United States, foreign earned profits that they paid tax on abroad. They're going to bring them home to the United States, going to create 20,000 jobs over the next 5 years. And, oh, by the way, they're going to pay $38 billion in taxes to the federal government. Now, put this in comparison. A stimulus package promoted by President Obama back in 2009 was approximately $800+ billion. One company is now bringing back over $250 billion to the United States for investment in the United States. So I think that there are a lot of pieces in this economy that are moving. I'd also point out to the rise in the stock market. I'd point out to the regulatory relief that has occurred in a lot of facets of our economy. I'd like to see more regulatory relief for our small banks so that local community banks can create more lending opportunities and more investment in our local communities. But I think it's a mistake to highlight any one aspect of the economy, particularly in retail, given the overall dynamics that, frankly, no Democrat or Republican president would be able to change what's going on in retail.
We'll go to Jim in Wappingers Falls. Okay, Jim, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Yep.
I just have a question for the congressman, which is I live in Dutchess County. I live in LaGrange, but I work in Wappingers Falls. Dutchess County had voted Republican pretty much nonstop since the beginning of time, back when the dinosaurs roamed practically. The four times that FDR ran for president, he never carried the county, even though he was from Hyde Park, which is in Dutchess County. So we tend to be conservative. Now, I'm highly upset by this tax bill because my taxes are going to go skyrocketing up. I've talked to my accountant, and I want to know if the caucus, the Freedom Caucus, can gather 30 to 40 members and create tremendous pressure on the parties in Washington to make sure they toe the line that they want them to toe. Why haven't you and your fellow Republicans from blue states done the same thing and kick some butt on this? Because it's very upsetting to me. I don't know why anybody that is a registered Republican would ever vote Republican again with this godforsaken tax bill.
Well, Jim, I presume that you're concerned about the loss of the SALT deduction?
You think? Yeah, my taxes on my property alone, just the house, is over $14,600 a year.
So you're...
That doesn't count state income tax.
And that's right.
It's just my property taxes.
And so are you a married tax filer filing jointly?
I'm not a married. I live in sin with a woman.
Okay.
We've been living in sin for 20 years.
Oh, okay. Well, just hypothetically, a married couple filing jointly, the standard deduction is now $24,000. So unless...
As opposed to 12, yeah.
As opposed to 12. And for the vast majority of people in our district, for instance... And mind you, I voted against the tax bill because of the SALT provision. The vast majority of people in our district, though, 92% of them of those filers are going to take the standard deduction. So therefore, losing the individual deduction for state and local income taxes, or limiting it to just $10,000, or losing the deduction for mortgage interest is not going to affect the vast majority of taxpayers. You're right to be upset.
Well,
you are my
congressperson.
Yeah. Well, and I voted no.
Well, but my question is, why haven't you or your fellow Republicans from blue states formed a caucus to make sure this crap gets unwound and it doesn't happen again?
Well, here are the numbers, Jim. We don't have the numbers of Republicans in blue states. The main number of Republicans who voted against this, 5 from New York, I think there were 4 from New Jersey, there were a handful from California. But the biggest problem politically in this passage of this bill, as opposed to, say, the 1986 Tax Act, back then there was a Republican senator from high tax states. Today, there's none. We had a Republican senator from New York, Illinois, and California in 86. Today, we had none. And the place to have stop this would have been the Senate. Unfortunately, it was not to be. But there are a number of features of the tax bill, the rate reductions, the elimination of the alternative minimum tax for most tax filers that will benefit most people. So take a hard look at this with your accountant, because you may actually not be receiving that much of a harm or
a
detriment.
No, I did take a look at it.
Okay.
Jim, thank you for your call. Okay, we're trying to get everybody here.
Okay, I'll go faster, Alan.
Well, no, you're fine, and everybody's fine. I just want to make sure that we take them in order.
And I'm okay, and you're okay.
That would mean Mary Lynn in Millerton, New York, one of my favorite towns, is on. Go ahead, Mary Lynn.
John, my question assumes that you are a proponent of fracking, and I wanted to know what alternatives to fracking can you propose to enhance economic opportunities in your district and in those portions of your district that are economically distressed?
Well, Mary Lynn, thanks for the call. The issue is one of how do we promote alternative energy? And I'm a supporter of alternative energy, of renewable energy. I'm part of the Climate Change Caucus. I've promoted one of the big issues with our energy use and our CO2 emissions is transportation. We have, as a result of natural gas production, actually greatly reduced CO2 emissions in the United States and in New York State over the last 20 years. Our CO2 emissions are down 20%, and it's because of natural gas, because it's a heck of a lot cleaner, not clean enough for a lot of folks. I realize that, and that may be implicit in your question. But CO2 emissions have dramatically dropped because we've exchanged coal for natural gas in electric generation, largely in this state. That's why, candidly, the nuclear industry is on its back financially and seeking subsidies from taxpayers, because natural gas is such a cheap alternative.
So, but John, your president said climate change is a phony issue.
Well,
and right. I mean, I just want to mention that.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
So the question of we have one president in the United States, so technically he's our president. So
mine.
Well, you know, Alan, this is we'll have to digress on that point a little bit, but I'm not going to waste the time on it. But the fact is that we only have one president at a time. I always wanted Barack Obama to succeed because he was our president. So whether you like him or not, he's there for the term.
Go ahead, Mary Lynn.
I just want to say that before I get kicked off, that gas may have done what you but it probably did what you said. However, solar would do it even better. So I don't know why you're not suggesting that we or you get together with some of your fellow congressmen and try to get some solar panels. The future is going to be that anyway.
Okay, that's your question.
And China's
whoa.
Take
Let's
that
go
away
back.
From us.
Okay, you
okay.
did that. Let's go back to John.
Mary
now.
Lynn, thank you again. There are subsidies for solar that are retained in the tax law. I've been supportive of those. But I think it's also important for us to recognize that we are not going to effectuate a complete conversion from fossil fuels to renewables in the time frame that a lot of folks expect, because a lot of this is not feasible within that time frame. The biggest issue with solar is the battery storage. And you're seeing companies with research, and you're seeing companies in the transportation sector try to move towards electric vehicles using batteries. But again, in order to, you have to generate that electricity from something. So the notion that we're going to completely divorce the economy from reliance upon fossil fuels in the short term is, I think, unrealistic.
But in the long term, you're for it?
Well, the long term is we have to move in that direction.
Thank you, Mary Lynn. All right. Now we're going to go, I suppose, we'll go to Jeremy in Chatham. All right, Jeremy, you're on.
Jeremy? Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Fazio, do you realize how your silence about the harm that Trump's lying, cheating, emotional instability, incompetence, ignorance, we could go on? Do you realize that this implies your consent and you appear complicit? Are you?
Well, thank you for that neutral question. I think I actually, what I do is I say when I agree with President Trump and I say when I disagree with him. And there's
when was that?
Whoa.
So,
Jeremy.
So, for instance, when the meeting, the statements that he made in the meeting about Haiti and Africa came out, I virtually immediately said I didn't agree with it. I said the same thing about the way the administration handled the Charlottesville issue back last August. And so I've been out to try to make sure that I'm representing my constituents, all of them. And that's what I try to do, and that's what I think I am doing. And it isn't my job to constantly monitor what the president does or says. That would be a full-time job. I don't agree with the tone and temperament of a lot of what he says. I don't agree with the tweeting in many respects. I think tweeting is a good means of communication on issues and policy. It's going to be, frankly, Donald Trump has changed the way I think future presidents are going to handle this. I just think that it often lacks the dignity and decorum that the office of presidency requires. And the fact is, the presidency, the position, the office should be a symbol of national unity. And oftentimes, I think that there's been a failure in that regard. But I cannot, Jeremy, in all good conscience, as a representative, spend my time just critiquing everything they do and say, because I'm trying to get things done for the people of my district. That's my job.
Thank you, Jeremy. All right, let's go to Raymond and Saugerties. Raymond and Saugerties, you're on.
Yeah, hey, thank you so much, Congressman, for your wonderful service. And thank you, Alan, for the great radio show. And I very, very much value it. I called yesterday because I said that I have a solution on the DACA issue. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. You know, listen, this is how I think that we could solve the problem. You know, we need technology. Building a wall would take so much man hours and money, and it's not going to work. They'll just build big tunnels under it. We need to use drones. We need to use hidden cameras. We need to do technology on the problem areas.
Okay, Raymond,
that would help tremendously.
Raymond, there are a lot of people behind you, so I'm going to let John come back and answer that.
Raymond, thank you.
I just have one other thing to add to it. You know, we need to, Mexico is a country with beautiful history, and we need to have it, them be responsible so that their people don't have to come over here and flee for their lives. Maybe we could get these American bilingual DACA kids to volunteer to go back and take back that country. And
okay. All right, community. Raymond. All right. Let's go to John.
Raymond, thank you for the call. I think the solution on DACA, I've co-sponsored a number of bills, bipartisan bills, to deal with DACA. It has to be done in conjunction with border security. And that doesn't mean building a wall from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific Ocean, but it means mostly technology, as you have suggested. But we also have to make sure that 10 or 15 years from now, we're not dealing with DACA all over again. So we need to have, in order to pass something in Congress, we need a reasonable approach to DACA. I've sponsored those kind of bills that folks who like DACA have supported. And the fact is, we have to do it in conjunction with security as well in order to get a political consensus to pass it in the House.
Okay, Raymond, thank you. Let's go to Denise in Middleburg. Thanks for holding on, Denise. There you go. You're on.
Hi, Congressman.
Hello,
this is Denise from Middleburg, New York.
Hi.
Thank you for taking time to answer our questions. I was just wondering if you could speak to the issues concerning the 2018 Farm Bill.
Sure. It's a big issue. I have toured many farms and agricultural producers in our district, as well as food pantries and others concerned about nutrition. And I'm working on a number of issues as it relates to the Farm Bill. Number one, dairy. The provisions that were put in the 2014 bill, the so-called margin protection program, haven't worked. We know we have to revise that, come up with a different means of accommodating the prices that farmers have to pay, for instance, for feed. That's a big cost. The margin protection program hasn't accommodated that, and it's actually taken a lot of money out of the pockets of farmers and not paid anything back. Secondly, I'm promoting, as I mentioned before, a number of things for agricultural research because it's really important for us to fight against invasive species that and pests that come into the United States. Third, I'm promoting a organic provision in the bill which will ensure consumers that when something is labeled organic, it truly is. A lot of the stuff that's coming in from abroad now is labeled organic, and it's not. And so we've got to have a beefed up agricultural department program to monitor that and ensure that we've got truth in advertising when it comes to organic. So there are a lot of issues. Denise, thank you for calling. Dairy, is one of the biggest issues for me, and I want to make sure that we're fighting hard for our Northeast dairy producers.
Thank you, Denise. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
WMT comes from Culligan Water of the Northeast for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work. CulliganNortheast.com. Capital Roots, providing job readiness and life skills training to city youth on their 2-acre urban farm. CapitalRoots.org for information on how to support the Produce Project. Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care all on one campus. DaughtersOfSarah.org. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, an undergraduate theater program in liberal arts with concentrations in design and technology, theater studies, and performance, newpaltz.edu/theatre. And Capital CarShare, a nonprofit car sharing network in the Capital Region, offering neighborhood transportation with a fleet of eco-friendly vehicles, capitalcarshare.org for donations and information.
And we are back with Congressman John Faso. All the phones have been ringing off the hook. We'll go to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Jim, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, Alan. Thank you for taking the call.
Hi,
Even
Jim.
Though I'm not a resident of the state, I'd like to beseech Congressman Faso to initiate a law that states that you cannot introduce other matters into a budget bill when there's budget financing to keep the government operating involved.
Jim, that would be great in the House where there are rules. Mm-hmm. It would absolutely not work in the Senate where there are no rules on debate. They can do anything they damn well please in the Senate. That's the way it works in the U.S. Senate. That's the culture of the Senate. That's why a lot of those senators like it like that. But I agree with you. The imposition, bringing up a non-budget related matter during this debate was a grave mistake on the part of Senator Schumer and the Democrats. No matter how strongly you feel about something, You shouldn't hold up the operations of government and affect adversely our military and others because of an unrelated budget issue.
Jim, thank you for that. All right, let's now go to Tim. Yeah, Tim in Ballston Spa.
Wow.
Yo, Tim, you've been hanging around for a long time. You got your chance. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm thinking back to the days of Newt Gingrich and how he kind of coerced his people into being in lockstep with the party line. And it seemed to me like independent thinking was interfered with. Is that the way things are today?
Well, there's no doubt, Tim, we are in a polarized political environment. I think that too often in this 24/7 media cycle that we're in, the left pays attention to the things they watch and read. The right pays attention to the things they watch and read. Compromise has become a dirty word. The very essence of our governmental structure encourages compromise. And they made it, the founders made it really difficult to get things done. Remember, they came from a parliamentary system where if you had the majority, you could do anything you wanted. And we have an intentionally difficult, cumbersome system, but it does require compromise. And I'm one of those people that believes that you've got to go in, negotiate in good faith with the other side, and try to advance the ball on behalf of the American people. Because at the end of the day, most people don't care about the philosophical or ideological disputes. They really want to know that they and their families are going to be better off and their country will be better off. So that's the focus I've had. And I think I have to tell you, Jim, there are a lot of public-spirited Democrats that I've worked with. I'm in the Problem Solvers Caucus in the House. Tom Suozzi from down in Long Island is part of that. A lot of other good Democrats around the country are part of it. So I work with those folks, and there's a lot more cooperation than actually you'd get otherwise from reading the media.
Thank you, Tim. Okay, we got a Mike sent us a note. Recently, your GOP colleagues in Congress and various right-wing media groups like Breitbart have begun a campaign to question the integrity of the FBI, inventing a fake conspiracy that claims is a, quote, secret society trying to undermine Trump. It's an obvious effort to delegitimize the Russian investigation. Will you condemn this coordinated attack on law enforcement agencies? I find it despicable, says Mike.
Well, I have great respect for the FBI. I think there are. I read the memo that people have talked about in terms of the FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and whether that was abused recently. And I've read that memo. I do believe it should come out, and I wouldn't comment on it beyond that, other than to say that some of the representations in that memo are disturbing. And so I do think there is there's a little bit we've got to take a step back from this. We cannot allow the rhetoric to damage a great institution like the FBI. I've known a lot of people that have worked there through the years. But I do think the truth should come out on all of these things, and I hope it does soon.
Victoria in Amherst. Thanks for waiting, Victoria. Go ahead.
Hi. So, Mr. Fassler, you speak with such decency. I was surprised to hear you say that the Democrats were effectively against the military and the shutdown when Claire McCaskill got up and said we should continue to pay our military as has been done in the past, and Mitch McConnell shut it down, and yet you and other Republicans keep using that as a talking point. Were you not there when that happened?
Well, Victoria, I wasn't in the Senate. I will admit to that. But I can tell you the effect of their shutting down the government on an unrelated issue would have been to withhold the pay and the allowances to military families and to the military service members. And that was a real mistake. And that's why Chuck Schumer and company folded like a cheap suit on Monday, because we knew they were going to do it because they knew they had gotten themselves into a box canyon they couldn't get out of. So the bottom line, Victoria, is that we really need to get over this stuff, and we really need to just sit down and negotiate, and that's what I want to do, and that's what I attempt to do while I'm in Congress.
No. Senator Duckworth said that, you know, she's a double amputee. John, she called out the president for being a multiple draft dodger, bone spurs and all the rest of it, and it's not as if the Democrats were to blame for this.
No, they were totally to blame for this shutdown. Totally.
Just
like Ted Cruz was totally to blame for shutting down the government for 13 days in 2013 over Obamacare. That was a mistake to introduce an unrelated issue into the budget.
So,
and that's what the mistake they made, and that's why they folded so quickly, because they realized what a mistake
they
made.
So let's wait and see whether the President of the United States, who says they're going to take up DACA, and Mitch McConnell are going to keep their words, or whether they're going to turn out to be lying liars as they have in the past.
Well, I'll leave that as...
Can I just say, my point was, though, to keep misrepresenting what happens on the floor of the Senate or the House is really a mistake, because intelligent people who listen, you lose points when you misrepresent what actually went on, and I feel that you did. Whether your other points are correct or not, why you wind up damaging your own points by misrepresenting what actually happened.
Well, again, Victoria, I thank you for your comment. I didn't hear what Senator McCaskill said, so I really can't say, but all I know is the impact of this shutdown would have grievously affected the military, would have adversely, it caused the cancellation of 15 Marine Reserve battalions doing reserve drills over this past weekend. And that's the kind of thing that our readiness in the military was being harmed by this. I'm glad they wised up and ended the shutdown quickly.
Thank you, Victoria. Okay, now we'll go to Susan in Kingston. Susan in Kingston, your turn.
Hello, Alan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to know why a woman, a married woman with her children, has to live with an abusive husband for 10 years before, even though she's not working, she's doing all the housework, taking care of the kids, etc. She cannot collect on his Social Security later on when either she retires or becomes disabled.
Susan, I'm not sure about what you've said, but let me take a look at that question, and if you could... if you are so disposed, give a call to my Kingston office and I can look into it further, because I don't know the answer to your question.
Thank you, Susan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. And now it looks like Karen in Albany. Karen in Albany, you're on.
Hi, Congressman Sasso.
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call.
Yep.
I have a question. I know that you have brought forth a federal bill to work toward relieving New York State's archaic and costly scaffold law, which is a labor law.
Yep.
Why did you take this on? And thank you for doing so.
Well, I took it on strictly because New York is the only state in the nation with this law.
And what is it, John?
And it's a law that says that if there's an injury on a construction site that is gravity-related, namely a fall from a ladder or any kind of height, that the standard of liability is absolute liability as opposed to comparative negligence. And comparative negligence simply means that if a worker were to fall and sue, the owner and the contractor could enter a defense to the allegation. Right now, under New York law, a defense is not permitted because it's absolute liability, and the only question is, what are the damages? We are the only state in the nation with this law, and what it does is, by outside experts have said that this raises the costs of all construction projects in New York State by 7-10%. It's been a longstanding issue here in Albany. But my proposal would say, when you use federal dollars on such a project, we will preempt this law and impose a standard that exists in 49 other states and also exists in New York State on other than gravity-related injuries, namely comparative negligence. This would go a long way towards reducing costs for taxpayers, making the insurance costs more affordable. Tappan Zee Bridge, it's estimated that if we didn't have the scaffold law, the liability costs on the Tappan Zee Bridge, which is a $4.5 billion project, would be reduced from $400 million to $200 million. So this affects everyone in New York State, but my proposal would only preempt it on federally funded projects. And I hope that Albany wises up and fixes this law as well.
And I take it the real estate industry is not against your law.
Real estate contractors, insurers, and people like Habitat for Humanity, which after Hurricane Sandy couldn't get liability insurance for their volunteers because of this crazy law.
Karen, thank you very much. Now over to, I try to get them in a row here. Bill in Millerton. That's the second Millerton call. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call, Alan and Congressman Faso. I wanted to call to take issue with some of the statements that you made in response to the other caller who asked about the concealed carry reciprocity bill. Your response was basically that law-abiding people don't cause gun violence, aren't the problem, and that the problem was criminals. It's really a kind of a circular argument, because as soon as somebody starts a mass shooting, they by definition become a criminal. I just want to call your attention to the fact that most of the mass shooting incidents recently, including Stephen Paddock in Las Vegas and Dylan Roof in Charleston and the shooter in Orlando, all had legal weapons.
Okay, and let's get an answer. We're running out of time here, so let's get an answer.
You're right about the shooter in Las Vegas. In the shooter in South Carolina was someone who should have been caught on the background check, and that was a mistake of the local authorities in South Carolina. The same with the San Bernardino shooter. So, look, there's always going to be an exception to the rule. I was simply reflecting, Bill, on the fact that the vast majority of people who have firearms, who have obtained them legally, are law-abiding and don't commit crimes. The vast majority of people who commit crimes with firearms are people who violated the law in getting those firearms.
But, John, if somebody's got a gun and a kid, in high school, grabs Papa's gun, it's the existence of the guns all over the place that leads to that kind of stuff, isn't it?
Well, you could make that argument, but I don't subscribe to it. That would be the father's fault in the hypothetical you raised.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. Let's go to Chris in New Paltz. Okay, Chris in New Paltz, you're on.
Hi, Congressman. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to talk to you. I'm a left-leaning independent, but a true independent. I'm 50 years old, and since I've been to college and studied political science. Many people feel that you say you want to represent everyone's, all your constituents, but I can say from a lot of people that we do not feel represented. I respect the office of the presidency, but it's hard to respect the person, the president, who doesn't respect that. And I just feel that, just the ineptitude that is going on in the U.S. government now is beyond proportion. You can't even make a budget. How long you've kicked the can down the road on the budget for so long, no decisions are getting done, and I just want to express this feeling.
Okay, Chris, we're running out of time. Chris, we're running out of time. Hold on a second, Chris. John, go ahead.
Chris, thank you. I mean, that's why I fought so hard to get the House to pass all 12 appropriation bills before the October 1 start of the fiscal year. The fact the Senate didn't pass a single one, and part of the reason for that is because they can't get the 60 votes even to take up a bill, because a lot of senators view this as the way to play ransom and brinksmanship. That's the wrong way to approach it, and I hope they change.
John, you're not telling Chris, I take it, that you approved of everything in those 12 appropriation bills, are you?
No, but I think that the fact that, you can't possibly agree with everything in a $4 trillion budget.
Okay. Chris, thank you for that. Let's see here. I heard today, says CR, there's going to be a 30% tariff on imported solar panels. If this is true, what is going to happen to the solar industry in this country and to the workers who outnumber the all fossil fuel companies' workers combined? It seems like a step into the past.
Well, the question is an interesting one, and the president has, at the request of solar manufacturers in the United States, has imposed these tariffs. I'm not quite sure if this is a good idea or not. I know that these people who install solar panels are against it. The people who manufacture solar panels are for it. The same thing with the tariffs that are being imposed on washer dryers from South Korea. So these are complex issues, but it's a good one to raise, and people should pay attention to. But I would just simply point out that people on both sides of the solar industry in the United States are for and against that issue.
Telesport writes, I would like to ask Mr. Faso why he supported the congressional revocation of the Office of Surface Mining Rule regulating mountaintop removal mining. Did he read the documentation of the years of work that went into that rule? How would he like to have Kinderhook Creek filled in. For background, I am an environmental attorney representing industry who happens to believe that everything industry included benefits from the regulation.
Well, actually, there was a lot of study of that regulation. It was a midnight regulation proposed by the Obama administration. It did not have the cooperation of the states involved, and it was widely viewed as an excess of power taken to the federal government from the states. And oh, by the way, the fact is that the waters are protected under the Clean Water Act, and the rhetoric of the other side on this regulation was simply misguided. And I would suggest my friend, the environmental attorney, go back and get the facts.
Okay, let's go to Stephen in South Glens Falls. Stephen, you've got to ask this in one sentence, otherwise I got to cut you off. Go ahead.
Thank you. Again, in reference to gun control, I understand the argument of law-abiding people should be able to have guns if they want. It's the criminals. However, since working as a physician in L.A. in the 90s and seeing what was going on there and hearing the same argument, it's pretty clear that nothing's changing with that argument.
Okay, you got to stop right there.
Whoa.
We're out of time. You're not helpful. Go ahead, John, real fast.
Stephen, thanks for
raising
Stephen, thanks for raising it. I do think gun violence is an issue in our country, most certainly. I think the solution that is being proposed, though, by a lot of the proponents of new laws is not going to solve the problem.
Okay, that's it. We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to Brian and Susan and Patrick and Kathy and Richard. They all called in and we left them on the line, and I do apologize for that. And I want to thank Congressman John Faso of New York's 19th District for joining us on the program today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. And Wild Bird Junction, 308 Delaware Avenue of Del Mar, offering wild bird seeds, bird feeders, bird houses, heated bird baths, binoculars, jewelry, nature toys, and games and chimes, where people and nature come together. WildBirdJunction.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, supplying the greater capital region with custom display solutions, commercial casework, and interactive exhibits for trade shows, special events, and museum exhibitions, EmpireExhibits.com, and Curtis Lumber, featuring Great American Kitchen Welburn cabinets and Cambria quartz countertops, 100% American-made products by American workers, sold locally by Curtis Lumber, CurtisLumber.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.